about n equals 4 supernumeraries. So I didn't write it here, but my plan is first I'm gonna introduce the field content and the Lagrangian of n equals 4, and I'll be talking about superconformal algebra and like gas duality and ADS-CFT correspondence. And if we have time, I'll probably just introduce the concept of superspace and superfield. I know the logic is a little bit weird, but it's sort of like importance ordering, I guess. So, well, if you remember from Zhou's lectures, I guess you'd recognize this, which is like the fields we have in n equals 4 supernumeraries. We have a gauge field and this fermion, like fermions and six scalars. So like in n equals 4, the setup is our gauge group is SUN and everybody is in the adjoint representation of SUN. And in addition to the gauge symmetry, we also have some global symmetry, which is called R-symmetry. The R-symmetry here is SO6, which is the same as SU4. So with respect to the R-symmetry group, I should have introduced the indices. So here the alpha and alpha dot are the spinner indices of two independent SU2s, and the A here are indices, and also this I. So the fermions, this one transforms in this representation of SU4, and this is its conjugate, so it's like 4-bar. And the scalar transforms as the sixth representation of SO6. And I have this Lagrangian here. When I write it down, it's just the.
There are six of them?
There are six scalars, but I mean, this is the symbol for the representation.
So there are six axes that transform like a vector, that transform with an SO6 matrix, 6x6.
And do these fermions also have an gauge group index, I guess? Like you have SUN, right?
Yeah.
So are the fermions charged under SUN?
Yeah.
So all the indices which correspond to SUN are six.
Right. Here is just I guess it's actually stupid to write the Lagrangian in this form, which you can't quite see. I guess the whole point is with all these symmetries and supersymmetries together, the Lagrangian of n equals 4 is uniquely fixed up to these two parameters, which are the couplings. Like the G is G on mu, which is a gauge coupling, and this theta is another coupling called instanton angle. So since we're talking about the supersymmetric theory, I'll just schematically write the Susi transformation here.
I think you've just put the
angle
subscript.
Sorry. I was
Maybe a question. So in the third term, you have the sum of I lambda A, and what's the middle symbol?
You mean this term?
Yeah.
I sum over A.
Yeah, but you have.
I mean this. This is sigma bar.
Oh, sigma.
Sorry. Transformation where I already suppressed all the indices and all the coefficients, just to illustrate a little bit like how supersymmetry, like how this field transform under supersymmetry.
Excuse me.
Yep.
About those representations, I'm a little bit confused. Don't the derived fermions, don't they usually transform as representations of SO4? But here they're representations of SU4. So
SO4, you mean like SU2 across SU2?
Yeah,
but that is being taken care of by the spinner indices, right? And the SUN is the gauge group.
Oh,
they're different.
The SU4 corresponds to the A index on the fermion.
Sorry, you were talking about the SU4.
Yes,
SU4 is the R symmetry, it's a global symmetry.
Yeah.
And this index is
is
the R index.
Okay,
like
the A is the R. Okay, and the lambda fermion is in different representation of SU4 than the lambda bar. Also, is it like the 4 and 4 bar as you wrote it down?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Sorry. Just make it. Thanks for pointing
that. This R symmetry is only for the scalar, right? Or is it for everyone?
It's for everybody.
The lambdas are transforming under 4. And the lambda bar.
Yeah, and the x's are transforming under 6. Does that make sense? So if you just look at the Lagrangian and assign all the standard dimensions for everybody, like all the fields, and compute the dimensions of the two couplings here, then you would find that they're dimensionless. So you would say like this theory is classically like there's no scale classically, and like there are a bunch of great people who compute the beta function. The beta function of the theory, and at one loop it's something like where these two C's are the projected Casimir. This one is for the scalars. I mean, you sum over all the scalars, and this one is for the fermions. This is just one loop. And since everybody is in the adjoint representation of the gauge group, so we know that both CI and C tutor J are n. And we just find that this thing is zero. And later, somebody else computed this beta function at all loops, and it turns out to be it's exactly zero at all loops. So this what this is saying is the X for supernumeral is conformal. Does it make sense to everybody?
Sorry, about the supersymmetry transformation.
Yeah.
There would be a set of these kind of generator for Q bars as well. A set of this transformation for Q bar as well?
Yeah.
Right.
Like so since the theory is conformal, we get a larger group, like larger symmetry group than what you normally get in something like QCD, I guess. So, and we are talking about supersymmetric theory, so it's got to be super conformal. First, what are the symmetries we have? We have conformal symmetry, which contains Poincaré symmetry, which is sorry, I should have mentioned this before.
It's not important, but in the summation of over CIs, do you also sum up? Presumably, these are the same CIs as here, right?
Sorry.
Those are Casimir, sorry.
Oh, Casimir, you said.
Yeah,
okay, sorry.
Yeah, those are the Casimirs.
I mean, the first two terms are standard.
We have Poincaré symmetry, which is SO3, comma 1. And like in addition to translation, and in addition to Poincaré symmetry, we have dilatation. And also the special conformal So all these things together gives us SO4, comma 2. And we also have supersymmetry. Now, when we put them together, we would have to work out like the algebra for everything. And if we commute, work out the commutator of the supersymmetry generators and the special conformal generators, we get something that is not here. So basically,
oh.
something similar for k and q bar. So these two are also like, so they transform under the same group as q and q bar, and they are also supersymmetry generators. So now we, for supersymmetry, we have, in addition to q and q bar, we have s and s bar, which are called superconformal generators. So if we count the number of like generators, we get 32.
What was the index on S bar?
This is an A. So I've said a little bit about ANC4, but why are we interested in ANC4 in the first place? I guess like for this course, the main motivation would be it is CFT correspondence, of course. So we know like ANC4 super Young meals is dual to the type 2 base string theory on LS5 cross S5, which is strong and weak coupling correspondence, which means like the weakly coupled gauge theory would be dual to the strongly coupled string theory. And in general, this kind of thing is hard to be verified because, like, you know, it's very hard to compute something for strong coupling. But like ANC4 is super nice in the sense that it has so many symmetries. Sorry. ANC4 is nice because like it has so many symmetries and it gives us something called integrability. And well, personally, I can't quite judge if ANC4 is really integrable, but naively I would say we can compute a lot more in ANC4 than in something as hard as QCD, right? Okay, another motivation, which is maybe more physical, is like QCD is asymptotically free, so like at very high energy, it's close to conformal, and we can learn something about QCD by studying ANC4. I guess this would be my motivation. And there's something I don't know how to derive. Maybe somebody knows, called S duality, which is basically saying like in a gauge theory with gauge group G and coupling tau, it's due to the gauge theory with the gauge group being the length of the original one and the coupling of 1 over tau. So, well, personally, I can't really explain why this is true. Can anybody comment on this?
What's the other group?
What is LG?
It's a Langdon's.
Right?
Did I get the name right?
TQL.
No, this is
how is it defined?
It's more general, but it's only true for n equals 4, right? This is only for n equals 4 square. It's a very special property.
Yeah.
So what is G, first of all?
G is a gauge group.
In this case, it's SUN with n.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. And LG, what is that? What duality is this? Just like a French name, Longman?
For SUN, this thing would be.
Oh, I see.
So what's the name of it?
No.
I personally don't really know why this duality is true.
Right.
But what this gives us is
and what, tau. Sorry.
What was LG for SUN?
Is SUN.
Sorry, what's tau?
Tau is a coupling.
Is that the complex combination of G and
yeah.
beta, right?
Yeah.
I think the only point about this is that tau was mapped to 1 over tau, so it's interchanging strong and weak coupling.
Right.
That's
minus 1 over tau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically this S-duality tells us that we have a so-called S-transformation which maps the coupling to the inverse and also the T-transformation which is something about the theta. And if you take a complex combination of these two couplings and assuming the theory is still under these transformations, we get a it's actually symmetry. Okay, so with all these facts here, I guess we can talk about ADS safety correspondence.
So can I ask a question, maybe not to you, but also to somebody who, to the audience, is that this S duality, can I think of it as coming from a type 2B S duality, or is there an easy way of thinking about that? Or?
Well, it's just a property of the field theory, but it's going to be related, right? So now we're enumerating various symmetries that n equals 4 has.
I see.
And then we're going to see that
okay.
the type 2B dual has the same symmetries. So it's
see,
not
right.
crazy that they could be equivalent to each other. That would be the first point, just matching symmetries.
Okay.
And what is SL2Z? When do we get the SL2Z?
So if we take tau to be something like this, and we have this, so you can say if tau goes to something.
Oh, so S duality is an SL2Z?
No, S duality plus. So the S transformation plus T transformation
yes,
gives you something.
Yeah, I thought to say it's more general set of transformations.
So the claim is that the set of transformations generated by the S and T is as the group SL2Z, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And is that a symmetry? And is that a symmetry of the theory? Is that just a transformation?
Duality is not a symmetry. The theory itself is not symmetric, but the theory that you get after the duality is equivalent to the original one. It's just some kind of a rewriting.
So does this itself do anything?
Well, for one thing, that was making strong and weak coupling and vice versa. So it's like a change of variables, but in the field space of fields. So the dual theory, for example, you would exchange electric charges with magnetic monopoles and such. So every process can be translated into a coolant one in the dual description, but it will not depend there, although it will correspond one to one.
So if we make any SL2Z transformation, we get a dual theory?
Yeah.
So naively, it looks like the S and T don't interact with each other. One affects G and the other affects theta. So is the statement that this is some bigger, like this seems like the symmetry doesn't just follow from the S and T, does it? I mean, it's some bigger symmetry that.
What do you mean by a bigger symmetry? I don't quite get your question.
It's any arbitrary combination.
Right. But it looks like that would just be a product of, I mean, you can invert G or you can translate theta, but those aren't sort of interacting with each other. Why do they go together to make a bigger group? I mean, this is just a very naive question.
I don't know. I think the statement is that this transformation that she wrote tau going to that ratio, like this most general thing can be obtained by a finite number of steps that are either S or T.
Okay. Z2 for doing the S transformations,
and
maybe Z for the T transformations. Your group should be sort of like Z2 cross Z. You just sort of combine those.
Well, okay, I don't cannot prove anything right now, but it's a mathematical fact that this small general transformation, this S of Z, is only generated by the two generators that are used there.
Okay, so in the S transformation, you only change the G young males and you don't do anything to theta. And in the T transformation, you only change theta and don't do anything to G young males? Or is there also something which happens to the other coupling?
I guess in the S transformation, you only change G. And yeah, right.
Then it can't generate something isomorphic to SL2Z.
Yeah,
but you are like SL2Z is SL2Z for tau, not for G or theta.
Yeah, but the group that you obtain has to be isomorphic, right? It's just some group that you perform on your couplings, and you can find some nice combination which transforms in the fundamental representation of this, which is this. But
yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't.
S should have been mapping the whole tau into 1/tau, not just GMU. But I don't know.
Right.
I see that the Magrini knots are also writing what she wrote, so I don't know. It seems to me, yeah, that both S and T should have been acting on the whole tau combination. Then that would generate S of G.
Right.
But is this duality like electromagnetic duality?
Yeah, exactly.
So it means that you can change monopole for electric charges or
yeah.
The only combination. So that's what the SL2Z means, right?
Yeah. So yeah, in general, you can transform any combination of just electric charges into some dion combination containing both electric and magnetic charges.
Move on. Yeah, so like just to put all these ingredients together, we have various correspondence, like well not really, just a few checks about various safety. First it's the symmetries. On gauge theory side. We just said we have like the conformal symmetry and the R symmetry. And on the string side, so the SO6 is just a rotation group for and SO4,2 comes from the ADS 5 bit. So these are the bosonic symmetries, and we also have, like, on this side we have 32 super symmetry generators. And well, it's just a factor of like the LS5 cross S5 doesn't break in a supersymmetry. So here you can also have maximally many supersymmetries as you want. And also, I guess that's what Tigger was mentioning, that in a string theory, you also have SL to the duality, where it's something like G string as some coefficient. And things like, you know, the G string is perfect G on your square. So basically, the symmetries match. Does it make any sense? Another thing is like the parameters of the symmetry. Like on the gauge side, we have G angles, of course, and string. And G string, which is G angles square. And since the group is SUN, so N is also another thing. And if you look at the large N limit, you'd find the more natural parameter in the theory is like here, where N and here. So like the parameter also matches each other. By the way, this is Cartooth coupling. And okay, I guess the logic is these two theories smell like they are. They have something to do with each other. So the thing is, like, what is the dictionary to translate one from one to each other to the other? Sorry. So roughly, the dictionary is like the following, like on the. On the gauge theory side, we have the single trace operator. With dimension delta. And this translates to like single string states with energy delta. I guess the reason why we are interested in single trace operators is they are gauge invariant.
So what's a single trace operator?
A single trace operator is like something you have a bunch of say, for example.
Right.
And also we have other quantum numbers to identify the observables. For example, you have Lorentz spin,
this corresponds to the angular momentum? Oh, it is fine. And
so,
we also have R.
Sorry, so is the Lagrangian a single trace operator? It's just because there's only one trace, right?
Corresponds to like three UNs as a subgroup of SU4. Sorry, three U1s. And these three R charges corresponds to the angular momentum of the string on S5.
Could you repeat why do you have those three charges?
So if you look at the R symmetry, it says U4, right? And like when you want to maximally this three corresponds to the three commuting you want in SU4. This is the dictionary of like ADS-DFT correspondence. And of course, if you have multi-trace operators, then it's mapped to the multi-string states. That supports this conjecture is there's a prediction of ADS-DFT, which is that if you compute the spectrum of the single trace operator, like spectrum of the dimensions of the single trace operator. For in the planar limit. And if you also compute the spectrum of energy of the single free string data, it is 5×SF. Should match each other, like following from the dictionary we just introduced. And like some people work really hard and compute both of them, and they do match.
Is it spectrum of what's the first line?
The dimension, like spectrum of dimensions.
Spectrum of dimension. In Omnis dimension.
Sorry, not the classical dimension, but the dimension. Like get corrected dimension.
Is
I guess I don't have like that much to say because I basically cannot prove it as FT. Well, I guess it's a conjecture by itself. Anyways, yeah. Well, last thing, which is something cute, superspace. And also, gosh, everything gets super. You can also have super field. Well, really, there's not much to talk about super space. So we have space-time coordinates. Something like x mu. And just the as the analog of this, you have a superspace coordinate, which is actually a spinner, a wire spinner. And well, by definition, they're the Grassmannian thing. So like they.
Maybe just a couple of words about motivation, why you're introducing. Okay, it's just a convenient technical tool for any supersymmetric theory. It's not here, I guess, we're only going to talk about n equals 4, but it's for any n equals 1,
yeah,
2,
it's
whatever.
Not,
it's just
it's
a
really
nice technical tool.
It's not something like too particular for n equals 4, it's just a, something like
yeah, and
that
it's
makes
not
sense
to use
nicer.
It, but it's convenient.
Yeah.
And it's also, is it also a dimension independent thing?
No, it does depend on the dimension. So yeah, in different dimensions, you have different number of axes, so you need also different number of theta coordinates.
Right.
So, yeah.
So is it possible to recover the normal space-time from the superspace coordinates?
What?
Yeah, so you can write some
Lagrangian
superspace, and from that you can recover the space-time Lagrangian. So this is just a technical tool. It's not any new theory or anything. It's just a nice technical way of organizing things.
And once you introduce this, like super space coordinates, you can write the fields as the function of both space time coordinates and super space coordinates. So, like in general, a super field is just a function of everybody here. And the nice thing about the superfield is like you can write the superfield in the expansion of the theta. And like, you know, since it's Grassmannian, so like the expansion truncates at some point. So basically you can, like the only thing you can possibly have is, I mean, the terms you can have is suppressed all the indices, but anyway, like you cannot have more terms in this expansion.
So is the A abelian or just it could be any?
Well, this is most the general thing. So.
No, I was wondering if A is E1 or.
It depends on your gauge.
Now it's just the vectorial component of the expansion.
I see.
So the theta theta f and theta bar g, are there indices attached to them? Like you mentioned, they're Grossmann. So
yeah, they have indices. That's why you cannot have like. So theta itself has the spinner indices, right? Which goes from 1 to 2.
So could you have higher terms that have like b, theta, and so on?
No, you cannot. That's the property of the Grassmannian variable.
Theta gets to appear only once. If you square it, you get 0, because like she was saying, it's Grassmann. Okay. So the largest number is 4, because alpha goes from 1 to 2, alpha dot also. So two thetas and two theta bars is the largest number. Maybe one more comment about the use of superfields. So last time we saw various like representations of supersymmetry, and this Young use is one of them. So that the only use is that a superfield is just a combination of all of those fields. All the fields that are transformed into each other by supersymmetry are just the different components of the superfield. So each superfield is a representation of supersymmetry. So then if you write a Lagrangian in superspace just in terms of a superfield, that's automatically supersymmetrically invariant. If you write bosonic coordinates like this Lagrangian there, you have to vary and check by hand that it's really invariant and supersymmetric. But if you write a superfield, you're guaranteed that it's invariant because it's a representation by itself. So that's why it's a technical tool, like I said. It's not something that you need to use, but it's very convenient to do it.
It's at the last one, is there half or is there a field?
Sorry, of course there is a field.
And you suppress the x dependence on all the fields, but
right.
Okay.
Yeah, and some terminology. Like sometimes you hear people talk about something called Carroll multiplets. The definition of this is just that if we take a general superfield and and if it satisfies these constraints, it's called chiral. It's also called BPS, which means that it's annihilated by half of the supersymmetries. Pretty much what
so
I want to say.
Can I, before we impose, say, a condition like the chiral multiplet condition, the number of degrees of freedom in a superfield, the fermionic degrees of freedom and the bosonic degrees of freedom, are they equal, or do you know that?
The fermionic.
Because the chiral condition just cuts down the number of degrees of independent degrees of freedom, right? Otherwise, we have more than physically relevant. But I was wondering if the superfield has, before we impose some condition, if it has the number of fermions and bosons equal. I guess we can count, right? But
they're usually equal on shell, right? If you impose the equations to motion. Off shell, if you just get superfields, they can be whatever. But
okay, so as
once
a mathematical.
Once you pose the equations of motion, then you're guaranteed to get equal numbers
right.
of physical degrees of freedom.
So as a mathematical object, it can be something that doesn't
yeah.
have to have equal.
And also, not every superfield is chiral, right? It's just one
right.
particular representation, but you can get some other that is also physical, but it's not chiral.
Right. I mean, we get the gauge bosons from the vector superfields,
yeah.
right? So this A mu doesn't do anything for us.
So these supersymmetric fields and stuff is all on the field theory side, not on the ADA side, or do you get supersymmetry? Does that matter in the ADA side?
Yeah, it's all about the gauge theory.
Right.
And it's not about S5 cross S5.
And the ADA S5.
I don't really get your comment, like why you wouldn't get supersymmetry on gauge theory.
I think what Anton is asking is that, is there a superfill formulation of string theory on EDS5?
Yeah, or does the supersymmetry of the strings matter at all?
Well, it matters because you get a supergravity dual, right? Yeah. So right. It's not just a gravitational background, but it's actually supergravitational. So it's also supersymmetric, but it's a bit more involved because there is gravity. It is just field theory, no gravity.
But what I've seen, you only have like a matrix that looks like gravity. You don't see any anti-commuting things.
The thing is that you actually have a 10-dimensional background that is dual to this 4-dimensional theory, AES5 times S5. So there is no superfluid formalism for 10 dimensions. You can write some things on shell, but full off shell, like all those fields. So see, in order to write a superfluid like that, sometimes you have to add so-called auxiliary fields. So for 10-dimensional supergravity, it's not known what kind of auxiliary fields to add in order to have full supersymmetric superspace description. So people mostly use like actual component fields or stay on shell.
The other supersymmetry of superstrings are on the wavelength, right? Because it's the only object we have in a free superstring theory if we get rid of the K-strings interaction. Mm-hmm.
No, but there is supersymmetry outside of brains here too, right? In the bulk space, it's also supersymmetric.
Yeah, but I mean, where you see it in your face is in the brains, because they are big PBS, so I guess, if you see ABS5 process 5, the supersymmetry that you see there is what, I mean, visually, you only see them in the brain.
I'm not sure what you mean. So as a 10-dimensional solution of supergravity, it by itself has supersymmetry. But it acts on the 10-dimensional fields, 10-dimensional supersymmetry.
Yeah, but what I say is that you only see it directly. I mean, here you are seeing the all these spinors and the square charge, but where do you see it in ADS5, process 5?
Well, especially if you're working with free strings, right?
No, if you look at the metric, okay, you don't see it, but if you look at the 10-dimensional fields, 10-dimensional supergravity, then you see it.
You solve the Killing spinner equation,
yeah,
in the background,
exactly.
And it has 32 solutions.
So if we have this nice superfield, is it possible to write the action for the Lagrangian for the supernovas in some nice way using this
routine? Yes.
How? Can you show?
Or at least can you write down for us the superfield for
the
N4 field?
The superfield for N4 would be, so you don't get that much. This many stuff, you just have a
So these data are the fermions, or is it something?
So the coordinates, right? So what are the psi's?
These are fermions.
Oh, are they the lambdas from here?
Okay, sorry. Yeah, there's some reduced.
Okay, each of the thetas has the supersymmetry indices, like 1 to 4 in this case, right? But there are 4 thetas.
Theta
is 1, 2.
Theta is the first term in the expansion, is that a boson, and the next one is a fermion? But what are the higher order terms? Like, I don't see how they're fermion.
You have to add up three bosons to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the right superfield, but I don't remember. Indeed, the superfield for n equals 4 plus 2 has exactly those fields, lambda, x, whatever, right? The fields in the Lagrangian.
What's g plus and g minus? What are they?
I don't know.
Well, I guess that it corresponds to A, the gauge field. Right? It has to be the gauge field because it has the highest and lowest density.
No?
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
They are the capacitive plus and minus one.
I guess I just misused some notations, sorry.
It's a scale, isn't it? I thought it was G plus a scale. Scalar, fermion, fermion, God knows what.
Sorry, I can't really work this out by heart, but in principle, you have just exactly the same field content there, and like it should be in this expansion. You just don't get this the whole bunch of things.
Is it a chiral
super key? Super
mix. Oh, which one?
Super
mix.
Is it a
chiral super key,
or
is it?
So you mean this or what?
Like the,
no, I think if we
it's
not chiral.
So I mean, you write it in terms of chiral super fields, but the theory is not.
The super key would be chiral.
Write this as a sum of various other
chiral super fields. Yeah.
You can do that. Yeah.
Yeah, but the. Theory, of course, is not kind of.
But when you write a super code for super young means, will it be chiral or
no?
There's no chiral.
But the super field is called chiral because that condition is called chiral because the fermion appear that survives that condition is a chiral fermion. So, but you have to combine them with other chiral superfields to make your non-chiral Lagrangian.
Okay, I'm trying to understand why we mentioned the chiral superfield.
No. Oh, that's useful. Maybe not right now, but
okay,
in general,
okay.
In order to
yeah.
Reduce superpotentials. That's
okay.
Another term that you can then use to make theory. So the thing is that when you write some Lagrangian generically in superspace, it's going to be like a normal Lagrangian is integrated over d4x. In superspace, it's going to be d4x times d to theta bar. This is for four dimensions, those thetas. So to recover the ordinary Lagrangian, you have to integrate out over the thetas. But the thing is, this is a generic Lagrangian, but you can add so-called superpotential, which contains only thetas or only theta bars. And that exists because you have such kind of chiral fields, so they're annihilated by half of the thetas, so that's why they depend only on half. And that has some other implications, maybe you'll see in future lectures. But it's a useful notion.
And here the scalars come from such a
superpotential. So I think, yeah, you always, what you mean, I think, is that you're splitting these n equals 4 super multiplex into n equals 1 or 2.
Right.
Super multiplex. Then we can represent it that way.
So when we write down the Lagrangian terms of the superfields, do you see that it's in any way special about being so symmetric?
So, well, right now I don't remember what is the superfield, but usually I think it's denoted here or something. So in that case, it will be just some integral of v squared over v or theta v, whatever theta. So then you see immediately that it's supersymmetric because it's just the superfield itself.
No, but I mean, do you see all the other symmetries?
Well, that
symmetric.
So
we're
looking for more.
No, from the superfield formalism, you only see supersymmetry. That's specifically for supersymmetry. And also, I think someone made a comment about that, but anyhow, so if you have just one theta with index alpha that goes from 1 to 2 and one theta bar, this is really for n equals 1 supersymmetry. If you have n equals 4, you have four pairs of such theta-theta bars. For n equals 2, you have two pairs. So each n something comes with its own set of theta-theta bars.
No, I guess that's it.